Hello, and welcome to Change Happens Now, a podcast brought to you by the Ignite Institute, an interfaith community of innovative leaders like you looking for ways to lead transformative change in our moment. And I'm your host, Chriselle Gabriel. Join us for important conversations in Season 5, where leaders in our community tell stories of discovering things about themselves, their voice, their sustaining spirituality, and their purposeful change through their work. On this episode, we're changing things up a little bit and shining a spotlight on our Latinx, Latine members of our leadership community in honor of Hispanic Heritage Month. These people are members of our leadership community who are and have been making important contributions to the world. And as a resource for those who want to take action, we'll be linking their organizations, books, and publications in the show notes. Hispanic Heritage Month is a time of celebration of the accomplishments of the Latin American people and an opportunity to have a more open dialogue around the power of community, the importance of representation, and a time to highlight ongoing challenges. With all that being said, we're taking this episode to recenter 12 very special voices of community leaders who have previously been on the podcast. In Season 1, Episode 7, we spoke with Joanne Rodriguez, Executive Director of the Hispanic Theological Initiative. We talked about Latinx leadership formation and the way En Conjunto partnerships transform people and teams. En Conjunto translates to all together. She talks about us reclaiming one's gifts and insights however you grew up, that they are insights to bring forward into your leadership and are not to be denied or dismissed. One of the most inspiring insights that she offered our community, especially to those from minority experiences and identities, was to resist the temptation to sacrifice one's own knowledge, whether it be language or culture or something else, just to fit in with an organization. She reminds us that the wisdom-based leader is one who embraces their cultural leadership style, they're rooted in their spirituality, and they're committed to leading from their personal authenticity. It's a beautiful call and reminder for us, particularly for those who have been marginalized based on our identities or social location, to stand in confidence of those gifts that we carry.
If you look at our current educational system, our histories are void. Mm-hmm. That's number one. And I think it's really important that as more Latinx begin to teach in the educational system and even parents, we begin to reclaim and actually write the stories ourselves. One is curriculum and two is advocacy. Mm. And three is even in our own homes, teach our children the history of our community. I think it's intentional. History is something that is very, very important for people to understand. And studies have shown that individuals that don't know their history or void of their history have, you know, it can create self-esteem issues. Yes. It could, you don't have examples of people that can help lead you. So there's a different understanding of that when you're raised in a Latin American country or in a country where you have your culture around you and your language, mm-hmm. than when you are born and raised in the United States. So I think that we need to begin there. We need to begin to recollect our histories, share more of that, take pride in that. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing is that we have taken on the oppressor. Mm-hmm. We have taken on and we have to learn to understand that that is not our space, that we are sometimes not welcome into that space, and that we also don't want to be part of that space in that mm-hmm. way. Let me, you know, we do want to be part of organizations and we want to be able to support the mission, but we cannot take on the oppressor's way anymore. It's not doing us any good and it's not doing institutions any good. When we enter those spaces, understanding the gifts that we bring to that space, the knowledge, the education, the experience, and we don't shy away from sharing that all of that skill set, and we can make a difference.
In our community, we talk a lot about spirituality, leadership, and social innovation. And with such a decorated leadership journey and understanding of its evolution over time, we thought Reverend David Vasquez Levy would be the perfect voice to speak into this in Season 1, Episode 9. He is president of the Pacific School of Religion in Berkeley, California, truly an inspiring higher education and immigration leader. He's a pastor, sought-after speaker, and leads at the intersection of faith, higher education, and social change. He talked with us about cultivating courage in this time of multiple crises. One of the gifts that Reverend Vasquez Levy offers our community is the ability to identify fear that might arise within us and see if we can find a deeper reality to center ourselves in that allows us to move beyond fear and instead show up, living with courage and imagination for what could be. We asked him how he thinks about leadership today, and this is what he shared.
You know, I've been in a variety of positions, maybe like many of those folks who are listening in with us today and are part of this growing network of change makers that we are seeking to shape. Like many of you all listening and many of us in our community at Pacific School of Religion, I have been the first to be in the roles I've been in many different settings, oftentimes trying to find my way of what it means to be a leader, because the folks who have gone before me have looked very differently than me. They have come into their positions with a level of sort of legacy or heritage or different kind of recognition and expectations that I've had to navigate a little differently. So being a leader for me has meant to be more attentive to broadening the definition of what a leader is, and not only look at those that happen to be in recognized positions. So I've learned to look for leadership. For example, a lot of my work's around migration. So when I'm able to say the person that is a dishwasher on Thursday night at a restaurant, on Sunday morning, that person may be a pastor in an immigrant congregation that is at the center of his communities, adapting and thriving in the United States, responding to crises in the United States. So that's a leader, you know, that may not necessarily be viewed in that way. That was my own experience when I first came to the U.S. I pretty much worked my way through college and seminary, working in kitchens, you know, being a dishwasher, you know, working in the fields. Those were the places where I learned to broaden my understanding of leadership. Over the years, I've had to, you know, participate in these events for trainings, right? And in one of them I was in early on in my career, we were encouraged to define in 10 words what we understood our mission to be in the world. At first, I got to tell you, I'm not often much into that kind of an assignment. So I was a little skeptical, but I spent the time. I'm glad I did. So I came up with the following 10 words to define who I think my own calling and sense is, which informs my understanding of leadership. So I feel that I am called to be a prophet, to set an ever widening table, and to resist fear. To me, those are the three components of leadership. To be a prophet, which is not necessarily about predicting the future, is about having the courage to speak both about what is broken in the world, but also the courage that many of our sacred ancestors have to speak about a potential alternative viable vision as well. So not just to criticize what is, but to say, this is what it could be.
Debbie Alvarez Rodriguez is a public speaker, champion for social impact, philanthropic innovator, and former Goodwill Industry CEO who is committed to advancing racial and economic equity and inclusion. As a community who are pursuing anti-racism as a reality, what it requires from all of us is not just to look at our jobs and careers in these linear ways, but we need to also be willing to say, how can I partner with people in different spaces and places that may not seem like the most logical next step? In Season 1, Episode 10, she talks about what racial equity innovation can teach in creating a more just world. Listen to this intense story she shared that teaches us that sometimes our best gifts can be our greatest obstacles to what we need to accomplish.
Intersectionality and allyship and collaboration is It is a fundamental skill and mandate for leadership, particularly in today's world. Okay. And it actually makes it more interesting. It makes it more creative. It makes it more impactful at the end of the day. We can't achieve the kind of society we want to achieve, or the kind of sense of self-worth that all of us are, wholeness that we're trying to achieve personally, without that collaboration without that focus on the we. I think the most important skill that any one of us that is aspiring to make change in the world, transformative change or just fundamental change, is we have to be quiet and we have to listen. We make a critical mistake as leaders when we don't do that. And sometimes that lesson, so I had to learn that lesson in a hard way. I like talking. I'm Puerto Rican. We talk a lot. We over talk each other. That's just the dynamic of my culture. Okay. And I was CEO of Goodwill, and I started losing my voice. Mm. I actually started physically losing my voice. And it got to the point where I had to actually have vocal cord surgery and a vocal cord implant done. And I had to go for 28 days without saying a word. Okay. After the surgery. Right. And for months, I didn't even know. I would go to give a speech and sometimes nothing could come out. Okay. So, God does for us what we cannot do for ourselves. I needed to learn how to stop talking and to listen. I needed to be a better leader. I needed to learn how to stop talking so much and listen. And I literally lost my voice. And I still remember being in a board meeting and I can't talk. And actually, that was the best board meeting we had had ever. Wow. Was that board meeting where I didn't say a word and my team and the board members did all the talking. And even on a personal level, I remember having an argument with my spouse when during that time when I couldn't talk, and I had a whiteboard. And I'm on the whiteboard and I'm, you're writing, no, you're wrong. And she's like looking at me like, and she goes, I think this no speaking is going to be really good for you. So sometimes Wow. God does it for us. Sometimes we do it on our own. Sometimes we have dear friends that tell us, we have to be willing to listen to our friends and our coworkers that say, hey, maybe you need to look at how you're being for showing up in the world.
In season 2, episode 3, we dropped in with Victoria Rosales, a holistic health coach, retreat leader, community organizer, and founder of Shared, a pop-up retreat and workshop space that exists to cultivate and support a conscious and wakeful community. To our leaders out there in the world doing meaningful work and seeking to do good better, Victoria offers a beautiful practice to implement in your own life and leadership to begin to experience a contemplative gaze. Contemplative care is a competency in the framework we train leaders on, and it's all about reclaiming a practice of care rooted in the contemplative practices of spiritual formation to create new cultures within organizations. Considering everything happening in the world, this is a useful practice for all of us.
A practice that I really love, it's really quite simple, but it's just this act of, it's kind of an embodied act of gently placing one hand on the heart and one hand on the belly, and taking a deep breath in and just asking oneself, how am I doing right now? What do I need right now? There's a lot of work to be done in the world today, and many of us are busy doing our best to achieve very important and lofty goals. And kind of get lost in the bustle and, in the hustle of seeing these changes come to be. And so just taking that brief moment to pause and connecting with the heart directly and connecting with the belly directly, connecting with the body and saying, what do I need right now? It's a little ironic, or it's a little countercultural to come back to the self and to say, well, this might be selfish, like taking a moment of pause in the midst of everything that needs to get done to take care of myself. Like, aren't we trying to move away from this individualistic society? Aren't we trying to move towards like helping others? But again, in Matthew 20, 20 and 22, it says, love your neighbor as yourself. It doesn't say love your neighbor more than yourself or love your neighbor instead of yourself. And so the more love and compassion that we can begin to show ourselves, the more love and compassion we can show the world around us. And so just taking that brief moment of pause to check in. And again, I do think it's important to actually put the hand on the heart and put the hand on the belly, because we're actually forming an embodied posture, right? That's why I love yoga, because it gets into our DNA when we put it, you know, when we put it into action through our body. And to have that brief moment of checking in, I think that it can go far in the work that we do, as subtle as it is.
La Mica Castillo is a powerful and inspiring Afro-Latina leader born and raised in South Central Los Angeles. As a professor, consultant, and organizer for over the last 20 years, a commitment to social justice, racial equity, and social change permeates every aspect of her personal and professional life. In Season 2, Episode 10, we talked with her about wisdom-based leadership, the framework we train on at Ignite, and about centering the wisdom of our experiences. As Black, Indigenous, and other people of color leaders emerging from our own respective communities, we're kind of told to check that at the door sometimes because it's not seen as a quote-unquote valid insight compared to other ways of thinking. And this is what she had to say on that.
Jonathan, I love the fact that you all frame the conversations around wisdom leadership, because it's so central to how I operate in my own work and things that I've thought about for a long time. I think one thing I neglected to mention when I was sharing my story is that I'm the oldest of 11 children, right? And so I'm also the one, because, you know, if you're the oldest in the family, especially if you have so many brothers and sisters, there's this thing that you have to kind of be wise, right? Like, you're the wise one because you've lived, even if it's only a year longer than the other sibling, somehow your lived experience lends itself to wisdom that they could benefit from. And sometimes it's annoying to them, right? Like, who do you think you are? You know, you don't know more than me. And I'm like, well, I'm going to pull the big sister card and say, yes, I do, because I've been on this earth a little bit longer than you have. But for me, I've actually thought a lot about wisdom over the years and, you know, where we derive wisdom, how you gain wisdom. I think in our society, especially here in the U.S., there's this notion that wisdom comes from, you know, degrees, right? That if you get a degree, you somehow are wise or wiser than others. If you are able to, especially if you go into graduate level degrees, right? You get a PhD, you reach the pinnacle of wisdom. And I think I used to believe that because that's what was taught to me as a child in school, right? That you have to pursue that college education for opportunities as well as to gain wisdom. But what I've learned over the years is that I feel like I've gained the most wisdom from folks who don't have degrees, right? From folks in my community who didn't have access to higher education, from my abuelo, my abuelitas, my grandmother, my mom, even from younger people. I feel like I'm learning more from my 21-month-old son than I have in most of my life in just the 21 months he's been here. And he's helped to strengthen my understanding of wisdom and what it means to be a person who leads from wisdom, in a sense, like a child, right? Like, for me, wisdom is going and seeking out new information from everybody, right? Everybody that you can learn something from every single person. You know, a lot of my friends that I went to high school and, you know, experienced my K-12 education with didn't go off to college. And I still have relationships with them, and I'm learning from them every single day. I think wisdom comes from seeking out new knowledge and information and building skills that, again, don't necessarily align with the traditional education model, but align with learning from and growing from and being cultivated by the elders in your community, having the respect for younger people in your community. I'm like, I've been really just fascinated by the folks who we call Gen Zers right now, right? Like the 25 and younger crew. I feel like they're the wisest people that I've ever interacted with. They just have so much love and passion and like empathy for people. And I see wisdom as being tied to that, right? That the more you can get to know people and their experiences, the wiser you become about, you know, what it looks like to be a not just a productive member of society, but a person who genuinely can connect with others and understand their stories, even if you can't necessarily relate or they're not yours, that actually, you know, gives you more wisdom to help you be a better leader. And so I think when I think about wisdom-based leadership, that's what I think about, right? How are we learning from one another? How are we learning from those who came before us as well as those who come after us? Because all of that makes us wiser and stronger leaders if we are able to be open to other people's experiences and drawing on the knowledge and passion and all the different things that people have to bring to the table.
Next, we hear from Arlene Mendoza, a dynamic leader in our community with 15 years of experience in tech, who also recently pivoted to the social enterprise space. She sits on the board of Moran Consulting and the Pacific School of Religion. Arlene has also been a guest speaker in our Wisdom-Based Leadership Certificate program, talking about creative communication because of her success around transformational leadership. In Season 3, Episode 2, Arlene talks with us about her journey as a Latina in tech, her appreciation for the duality of culturalism. But what we really sat with long after this episode aired was about the Oaxacan concept of tequio in relation to the collective. Take a listen.
So Oaxaca has a lot of indigenous communities. It's one of the states in Mexico that has one of the largest amount of indigenous communities where Spanish and another dialect may be spoken. And so my family's from the Mixtec region, and there's a word called tequio. And tequio means, tequio is a concept in your community where you do a service that enables and provides for the community. So for example, in the towns where my parents are from, electricity or let's say like roads, maintenance of roads, food, if you have a crop that you have a little bit more vegetables, you share with your community. So there's a concept of tequio that's about strengthening your community in like being of service in your community. And I feel like that word resonates and represents a lot of what I believe and feel and think when it comes to like the conversations and the inclusivity of additional voices. And there is just a value I hold really strongly about uplifting others, being a voice for the voiceless. You know, there's just not a lot of me's that I see always at the tables in tech, to be honest. But yet what I say matters. Like what we say matters. Like whatever your voice is, I feel that you have not you, but like we as a collective, we have a responsibility of wherever we're sitting. Our voice matters, our experience matters, our lived experience matters. And that wisdom that comes from generations past that we may or may not know of, I think that's the other thing. So tequio, I didn't realize it was a philosophy of my grandparents. I just thought it was a way of life because I saw them and uncles and aunts and cousins, like I saw the community when I'd go just like, oh, that, you know, Jose down the street, it's his turn to help maintain the roads. But I didn't know that it was integrated as a part of the philosophy. And I was like, that's just the way of life. But I feel like every culture, right, every ancestral wisdom has those nuggets of some of our ancestors contributed in some way to improve the collective. And so I have a strong belief in, from a mathematical tech way of thinking, that I can integrate and intersect both, right? Like bring in this more, I mean, talk like machine learning, AI, like I love all that stuff. Like I love understanding, learning neuroscience with the lens of the tequio, with the lens of the collective, the community, global good.
If you've ever felt imposter syndrome, a real phenomenon that affects emerging and establishing leaders, you'll love to hear what Grace Martino Supriest shared in Season 3, Episode 3. She's a young leader with a heart for community development and desires to help the capital C Church create bridges of love with the world around it. She's the Outreach and Growth Specialist at the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship and is part of the Together for Hope team that works alongside organizations in the 301 poorest counties in the U.S. We ask Grace how we can change the narrative inside our own heads to move past the imposter syndrome. And this is what she had to say.
I mean, this is a constant battle. This is a constant reframing that we have to do, a constant, a daily waking up, a daily meditation and saying, I am who I say I am. I am who this ultimate universe says I am and has instilled in me. And we kind of have this idea that all who we are and all that we are is dependent on the things that we have done. And really, in some cases, that is kind of true, right? We are a product of the things that we have done, but we're also so much more than that. We are shaped by our environment. We're shaped by our histories. We're shaped by our families. We're shaped by people that have poured into us. And so ways that I have really been trying to combat imposter syndrome is that I'm not just myself. I'm a representative of my community. Wow. I'm a representative of just giants that have come before me. I am not just me. I'm not a silo. I am really a product of a beautiful intermingling and interconnectedness of experiences and people that have come before me. So my community has shaped me, my environment has shaped me. And if I can see the value in those things, if I can see the value in my environment, in my community, and people that I love, my mentors, then how could I not believe in myself when I'm a product of that? And so I think about that a lot. I think about that, how my professors, my classmates, my parents just walked and deposited so many things in me that give me a foundation to stand on. And this really, that foundation that is not only cemented on who, just the things that I am, the things that I've done, but is cemented in a foundation that I think is God, right? A foundation that tells me who I am, right? Gives me value, and not in this weird Christianese way, right? Whatever your faith is, I'm a Christian, but this Christianese ways where people are like, oh yeah, I'm a child of God. I am this, I'm that, which yeah, is true, but I'm also more than that. I'm validated by my community, my environment that God has blessed me with. And really this Holy Spirit that's in me, that, and which doesn't make me the, like, doesn't mean I think I'm the mess, I'm the best, but it does mean that I am connected to an ultimate source that also connects me to the world around me, that gives me, that validates me, and that says that I'm important, and says that the space that I take up matters. And it's a faithful contribution. It's what I have to give back out of a product of what has been given to me.
Growing up in the Central Valley of California, born to Mexican immigrant parents fighting for her rights and for those around her, and being a farm worker herself with her parents, has deeply shaped Dr. Martha Hernandez's leadership journey. She's an incredible leader with extensive clinical and research experience working with underserved populations in schools, universities, community mental health clinics, and hospitals. As director of the Spanish Training Track and associate director of Family Support Services of Ronald McDonald House Bay Area, her service work includes advocacy on behalf of the children, adolescents, and couples there. We asked her about the importance of creating educational opportunities where there is almost no emphasis on higher education for Latinx communities, and what she shared was spot on.
I would say there's a ton of opportunity. Just from a social justice mindset.
Mm-hmm.
So I really do think on different systems and different levels. So I think of the individual level, the community level, and then obviously the legal system level. And so I would say if we were to look at the largest level, which I think is probably, you know, really breaking down those systems of oppression, looking at the way we might hinder communities from being successful to attain a higher education. So things such as what our grading system is, which we know is really unfair at times, or the tests that we utilize, finances. If we just look at the cost of education in the U.S., right, it's almost unattainable for many lower resourced individuals, and in the Bay Area, it's almost impossible. I mean, we're talking about $50,000 to $60,000 a year for 1 year of graduate school, and then cost of living, which is insane. Wow. And so, universities want to attract minorities from the BIPOC community, specifically Latinx individuals, and then there's no support for these individuals when they arrive at these universities. So whether it's financially or providing mentorship or some of the other resources that other students might have had just because they were raised in a household of privilege, right? And so I think on a systemic level, you know, being able to create some of these pathways or breaking some of these barriers early on so that individuals can actually access the educational system in a way that is meaningful for them and that's easily accessible, I would say that that would probably be like at a systemic, at a higher systems level. And then I think at the university level, we don't have a lot of these conversations. You know, we're having more and more of these conversations now. I think COVID and the death of George Floyd have allowed for a lot of these conversations to begin. And it's unfortunate that that's what it took. But I don't necessarily think that we're moving as quickly as what the impact is. And so, A, having more of these conversations even within universities, hiring more Latinx individuals, and I also think hiring more Afro-Latinx individuals is equally important. Many times I am a fair-skinned Latina, and so the privilege that I have because of that is very different than some of my peers. And so how do we also increase representation of other races and ethnicities even within the Latinx population? And then I think supporting faculty from BIPOC communities to not have to take on the additional burden of teaching others about their experiences or making sure that they're the ones running the affinity groups, right? I think many of professors who are from the BIPOC community tend to be overworked. And so being able to support your faculty as much as your students, and then I would say on the individual level, being able to create a pipeline for younger children and targeting communities early on is really necessary. Being able to help them see and understand what the possibilities are, but also what the barriers are and how to navigate those barriers. How do they get through them? Just, I remember being in high school and my school counselor told me, every school that you're applying to is really hard to get into. Why don't you go to the community college? And mind you, I had over a 4.0 GPA. My SAT scores were relatively high. And I ended up getting into UCLA and quite a few other universities. And so I think had I not had my siblings as leading the pathway for me or as examples, it would have been really easy for me to say, oh, she's right, I should just go to the local community college. And that might be a place for somebody to start because of, you know, various reasons, but also that it can really hinder somebody's confidence to say, those are really difficult to get into. You should, you know, strive to go to this other university versus maybe one that you want to go to. So I think even having those conversations and those pipelines in schools early on to allow students to get into higher ed would be helpful.
If you're anything like me, you might also be feeling burnt out from doing this kind of social justice and impact work. So for season 4, episode 6, we sat down with our very own director of strategy and content, Jonathan Murillo. It's heartwarming to hear what he sees leadership in the 21st century needing to look like. And when I asked him what shifts he was seeing in people looking for a new way to lead via our wisdom-based leadership framework, here's what he had to say.
Yeah, it's really interesting because every time, you know, I look at the, like, the dossier of leaders, of, you know, who's joining, and it's so, you know, a broad an age in stage of leadership, you know, a COO of a, you know, healthcare nonprofit, and then, you know, a graduate student, you know, a youth pastor in the Pacific Northwest, and an engineer in Palestine. And it's like, what, you know, what are they facing? What do they need to keep them going in their journey? And how do we actually every time I step into that space, I'm just like, is this, you know, how's this going to go? Is this really, how is it going to really meet everybody where they're at? And I'm always amazed that like there's these themes that are really running through across all of the different categories of people who, like you mentioned, like, you know, are participating in meaningful work that is, it's costly. And so there's a couple of things I think that we've been talking about a framework as almost like these three shifts that leaders need to make to reject the status quo and embrace this new way to lead that is centered and grounded on a sustaining wisdom. And the first thing we do is try to call people back to the wisdom that has shaped and sustained you already. So we've already talked about it a little bit, but you know, we're not trying to prescribe necessarily this tradition or this, you know, these set of spiritual practices or frameworks or principles, but we kind of curate and offer different, you know, insights of wisdom from marginalized communities across the world and across time, but always kind of landing with, where is this showing up for you? How are you engaging with this? What have been some of the wisdom that has shaped you to this point that you can kind of root yourself back on and draw some resource to sustain you? So who have been the ancestors in your not just your spiritual tradition or even your familial line? Maybe, yeah, like go back and think about, like for me, like remembering how entrepreneurial my grandmother on my dad's side and my grandfather on my mom's side, like how both of them were, like that bears witness to something in me that to keep going because I'm standing on the shoulders of their lives and contributions. And it looks very different, but those same instincts and tendencies and characteristics, like that's something I've received and passed on. And in the same way, there's things to be healed, right, that we've received from our ancestors, but to call attention and awareness to that is one thing. And also to think about the ancestors of your area of work. Who are those people that have gone before you in this social issue that have made headway, that have sacrificed, have taken the conversation thus far? I think rooting yourself in even their stories, their insights, becoming aware of the ancestors of your mission helps to resource you with, as in a Christian tradition, we would say like with a great cloud of witnesses, you know, that this collective that have gone before you bearing witness to what could be and what is, and that's sustaining and resourcing in at least one regard. And so when we talk about wisdom-based leadership, we're talking about the wisdom that shaped you and your community and your collective and calling attention to that. But across the board, we're seeing these like three shifts that need to happen. And one of them is the shift from shallow individualism to courageous collaboration. When we talk about shallow individualism, you know, when we're with our group of leaders, everybody contributes like a defining characteristic or a story or an anecdote of when they've experienced that. But it really is this ego-driven leadership that harms communities. It's this making decisions based off of perceptions. It's even not just at an interpersonal level, but it's when, you know, departments inside of organizations are operating individualistically, you know, competing over resources. And those are all kind of symptoms and signs that we are operating at this shallow individualism. And the shallow piece of it is really because of this pressure to perform that you mentioned, there's no real room or trust or safety to go deeper, right? To just reflect a little deeper, to just pause and say, where is this coming from? What might this be? And so on the opposite side of that, the shift from into courageous collaboration is the courage is not just to set bigger goals and the courage to you know, to do more and to scale the hill. Mm-hmm. It's really the courage to almost be brave enough to stop and reflect and go deeper. And especially do the internal work. We use, you know, the Enneagram framework a lot here because the Enneagram is one body of wisdom that helps you become aware of what's driving you. And so to become aware of what's driving you is really needed to know how then to work with people, because when those drives are, you know, in the wrong direction or somebody's driven by something and somebody else is driven by another, then how do you... It's just a recipe for not just not getting a lot done and being unproductive, but conflict and harm and that shallow individualism seeping in. So courageous collaboration is the courage to look within, the courage for change to begin within and permeate its way out of your circles of influence. It's the ability to collaborate, being mindful and brave enough to name power dynamics and the flow of power amongst stakeholders. It's that kind of courage that I think is that first needed to become aware of. Before we can do really good stuff together, we have to be brave enough to assess and reflect and to name and to notice how we need to move out of that shallow individualism.
So after we've done all that, what is the purpose gap and how do we close it? On episode 7 of season 4, we sat down with Dr. Patrick Reyes, author of The Purpose Gap and Nobody Cries When We Die. As the Senior Director of Learning Design at the Forum for Theological Exploration, Patrick wrote both of his books for communities of color to have a better understanding of why their dreams may not come to fruition as easily as others. And that resonated so much with me in my own journey. This was his response when we asked him if others are even going to validate your lived experience, and why the voices and spirits from our lives are the reason the gap closes for some and widens for others.
Let me just say, they won't validate. I wrote in Nobody Cries, the first book. I tell a story about being in school, and I was hanging sheetrock at the time. I show up to exam. I'm covered in the white dust from hanging rock all night, trying to make ends meet so I could pay for this school, because I was paying for it out of my own pocket. I didn't want, I was taking out loans, but I didn't really know how to financially manage myself, so I was doing it both hand. And I'm not even maybe 10 minutes into this exam, and the professor calls me out, takes me out to the hallway and says, grad school is not for everybody. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, grad school is not for everybody. You're a distraction to the rest of the class. Look at you. You stink. You're covered in I don't know what, and you're barely awake. And so I remember pleading with them for, let me just like at least try to fail. Let me go in and at least fail this exam that we're taking. and then we'll have a conversation. But like, don't kick me out in the middle of this. So that's to say that these places are not designed for us. And those mentors, those folks who spoke life over me, I would say most of them, with the exception of one, were not in the academy. That those are the folks in our communities who fuel us, who care about us. When I was going to quit school, I went back home, started working in the packing sheds again, doing quality assurance. And I went for a small walk with one of my close friends who grew up, doesn't even have a high school diploma. And I was telling him, like, this is BS. These folks, they don't get us. They don't care about us. No, we're not in the curriculum. We're not reading anything by Latinos or Chicanos. They completely erased us. And he says, don't quit. What's wrong with you? You don't think I wouldn't want to be where you are? And you're representing all of us. Don't quit. You got to show them that we got something special too. And so for me, I have a humongous chip on my shoulder. And for those who are trying to go for the first time, who are making big dreams and seeing all those barriers in front of us, say, make that chip your friend. I talked to it, hey, all these barriers, all the plight of all my ancestors that are carrying me, that are fuel for me and all that stuff, they are also telling me that we got to find another way. We got to build things differently. So I spoke those pains. I spoke those challenges to people I grew up with, my family, my community. And look, my community, if they were all on this call, they'd be calling BS on probably half of what I say, because that's what we do as a family. And that's what we do as community. And so that they kind of held me to account to what I was doing. So to not like lift up this system that we're moving into, or these white systems, or these dominant culture systems, as if that's the only place to find credibility or accountability. Yeah, yeah. They were saying, hey, we're your community. We got you. And you're doing this. And it's not just you. It's all of us doing this with you. So for me, it's always been about how do we recenter that community. It's not finding that one professor in your faculty that's going to say yes, or, you know, that one guidance counselor that's going to check off the box and say, you know what, you could do it. I was just talking to someone else who just got a PhD, one of the most brilliant Latinas I've ever met, you know, 4.5 GPA in high school, you know, 4.0 through grad school, all stuff, told me that their guidance counselor, and this is a Latina, first generation, told them, even with all this, community college was the best they could do. I mean, these systems are made to destroy us. Yeah. And for me, it really has been about like, hey, okay, if they are, I'm not going to find life here. I don't need to. I got life where I am. I need to go back to my grandma, to my aunties, to those teachers who are back home who look like me, sound like me, dress like me, shop at the grocery store I shop at, who affirm me for who I am. Little Patricio, you know, like they can say that. And that has been a big culture shift. That's been a paradigm shift for me for closing the purpose gap, is to really honor those communities that we come from.
Heidi Lepe is a Honduran Mexican writer, theologian, and storyteller from West LA. As the founder of Brown Beloved Co., a collective space at the intersection of faith, raíces, or cultural roots, and justice, her work centers on the spirituality and liberation of Brown women, the Brown church, and Latine, Latinx communities in the U.S. In Season 4, Episode 8, we explored what liberation could look like for communities of color, and she dropped some gems on how to carry through and move forward if you're in an organization where you don't feel you can get to where you want to go. She's also a dear friend of mine, and I love this conversation.
I pray and I hope that you find your community that will get you through. Because, we've been there. You and I have been there at one point where we're like, I don't know if we want to go back. I don't know if I want my body to go back into these spaces. But when you find a group of people that are for you, that are for your flourishing, that hold space for you, that you can go to without judgment and know that they will hear all parts of you. That is the only way I feel, you know, you'll be able to carry through. And I have prayed for people like this in my life, and God has been faithful in answering and providing. So, you know, I pray this for you, and also continue to find even spaces of haven. Like, does this mean worshiping in your the tongue of your parents, the language of your parents, or home? Does it mean going to a church here and there that's, you know, from your own upbringing and cultural context? Find those spaces where you can rest and just be, because that's what you need to keep going. That's what you need to discern, to move forward.
Reverend Isaiah Yong is a practical theologian and international spiritual teacher who has had a big hand in shaping the wisdom-based leadership framework that we train leaders in. He's published research on issues on practical theology, pastoral theology, spiritual care, intercultural and interreligious studies, and social change. On episode 1 of season 2, we asked him what compelled him to ignite and what he sees is worth investing in cultivating his own leadership and in the community we're building together. And this is what he shared.
I think for me, it's important to note that I am the son, the eldest of parents who are immigrants to the United States. And for someone who saw their journey where they walk through significant levels of poverty as youth and as children, and as they grew up in this country, I've seen a lot of the challenges that we face as a nation, and ways in which we do not have a society where every person has equal access to thriving, to opportunities to lead. And so part of the hope that I have with this work and for our time and our moment is that we're all recognizing these inequities on huge levels, but how can we but be part of creating more opportunities, and how can we showcase stories and narratives and leadership practices that really come from those experiences that have been marginalized in our society. For someone who comes from a family of immigrants, as well as someone who identifies as a person of color, I am committed to the ways in which we can see justice happen, and not just for those who come from immigrant backgrounds or those who have been racially minoritized, but for every person. And so I also recognize as a cisgender, heterosexual male that I also have blind spots because of the privileges that I've been afforded, and why it's so important for this work and this community that we begin to feature other kinds of expressions of leadership, other kinds of knowledge and efforts that come from different identities, different cultural and spiritual traditions. And so for me, it's really, what can I offer, but also what can I learn? What do I have to unlearn about my own leadership journey so that I can be part of a society and of a world that we can see everyone thrive.
Thank you for joining us on this episode as we honor the unique voices and stories of Latinx leaders in our community. We hope that you will take these moments and use them as starting points to reflect and be better in your own journey. Check out our website at ignite@psr.com to learn more about how to become a member of our global community of emerging leaders, resourcing and encouraging each other. As a member, you'll have access to exclusive content, workshops, events, and group coaching, all designed to help you develop skills as a spiritually rooted leader creating social change now.